Today on Wings, the new executive director of UN Women.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In September 2021, the Secretary General of the United Nations appointed Dr. Seema Sami Bahous to be the new Executive Director for UN Women, succeeding Phumzile Mlambo Ngcuka of South Africa, who served 2 4-year terms. The first UN Women Director was Michelle Bachelet, former President of Chile, who is now the UN's High Commissioner for Human Rights. Seema Bahous most recently served as permanent representative of Jordan to the United Nations in New York. She has a great deal of other pertinent experience, which we will discuss later in the program. But first, let's hear part of the new director's remarks for November 25, 2021.
Today is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. Here at the United Nations and across the world, we are celebrating those who are working to protect women and girls and defend their human rights. And we welcome new partners, governments, organizations, institutions, community groups, people everywhere to join us, raise your voices, and work together to transform lives, not only during the 16 days of activism, but every day. Violence against women is a global crisis. In all of our own neighborhoods, there are women and girls living in danger. Around the world, conflict, climate-related natural disasters, food insecurity, and human rights violations are exacerbating violence against women. More than 70% of women have experienced gender-based violence in some crisis settings. And in countries both rich and poor, gender prejudice has fueled acts of violence toward women and girls. Violence against women often goes unreported, silenced by stigma, shame, or fear of the perpetrators, and fear of a justice system that does not work for women. The COVID-19 pandemic, with all its isolation and distancing, has enabled unseen violence, a second shadow pandemic against women and girls, where they often found themselves in lockdown with their abusers. In all corners of the world, helplines for violence against women saw an increase in reports. The human rights of women, including the right to security, dignity, equality, and justice, are core principles of international law. And we know that the leadership and safety of women in all their diversity plays a vital role in economic progress, community welfare, children's health and education, and more. All human life benefits when women's human rights are upheld, and we all suffer when those rights are abused. But there is hope. In recent years, much has been achieved to prevent and reduce violence against women and girls. The challenge now is to expand global efforts and make a difference in more lives. We must ensure that essential services are available and accessible to women of all ages. We need to support environments, online and off, in which women can participate safely in decision making. New opportunities are opening. Last summer, as part of a $40 billion commitment to the women and girls of the world, the Generation Equality Forum launched the Action Coalition on Gender-Based Violence. The coalition brings together a wide array of women's groups and others, youth, civil society, faith-based institutions, philanthropy, private sector, international organizations, and UN member states. There will be concrete financial and policy commitments and scaled-up initiatives in critical areas, survivor support services, legal frameworks, and more resources for grassroots organizations. Women's groups and concerned people everywhere have been vital to the progress that has been made. Going forward, together, we can make life better and brighter for many more girls and women across the world.
That was UN Undersecretary General Seema Sami Bahous, the newly appointed Executive Director of UN Women. Bahous has a doctorate in mass communication and development from Indiana University in the United States, a master's degree in literature and drama from Essex University in the UK, and a bachelor's degree in English literature from Jordan University. Fluent in Arabic and English, she is said also to be proficient in French. Early in her career, Bahous worked for UNICEF and civil society organizations. Then she directed charitable foundations in Jordan. Next, she became media advisor and director of communications for the Royal Hashemite Court. From there, she moved up to ministerial posts as advisor to King Abdullah II and then as president of Jordan's Higher Media Council. From 2008 to 2012, she was an assistant secretary general at the League of Arab States, where she headed the social development sector. From 2012 to 2016, she worked at the United Nations Development Program, directing the Regional Bureau for Arab States. She was permanent representative of Jordan to the UN before accepting the post as head of UN Women. Bahous's comfort speaking in UN chambers was on display on October 21, 2021, when she addressed the UN Security Council on the topic of UN Security Council Resolution 1325 on Women in Peace and Security.
I now give the floor to Ms. Seema Sami Bahous, the Executive Director of UN Women.
Mr. Secretary General, Madam President, Excellencies, distinguished delegates. It is an honor to address the Security Council to present the Secretary General's report on women, peace, and security. In these dark days of multiple crises, this topic is more important than ever. As I start my tenure as Executive Director of UN Women, I look forward to working with you to strengthen and accelerate the implementation of the Women, Peace, and Security Agenda. It has been 21 years since you passed Security Council Resolution 1325 in this very chamber, yet we still meet to discuss the limited progress made. The doors that Security Council Resolution 1325 was meant to burst open have let in only a glimmer of light. But as women, as peace builders, as development practitioners, we take that glimmer and we fight. As the Secretary General has said, the United Nations intends to push back, double down, and move forward. His report in front of you today is rich in evidence. Let me focus on two of the most salient lessons from those findings. First, we need to significantly increase funding for the Women, Peace, and Security Agenda, and conversely curb military spending. Second, we need to do more to support women's meaningful participation in peace and security processes. On the need to curb military spending, distinguished delegates, if we want to see a paradigm shift in the way we confront peace and security issues, we need to take a hard look at the levels and trajectory of global military spending. Curbing military spending has been a chief strategic objective of the Women's Movement for Peace. It was a key objective of the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action in 1995. It was reaffirmed recently during the Generation Equality Forum, and it is essential to achieving SDG 16. The evidence clearly shows that high levels of military spending in post-conflict settings increase the risk of renewed conflict. It also shows that investing in gender equality has a high return in peace dividends. Yet, we continue to overspend in the former and underinvest in the latter. Last year, global military expenditure increased by 2.6%, even in the face of the contraction of the global economy of 3.3%, and the competing demands of COVID-19. That is nearly $2 trillion spent in the same year that all economies, whether in peace or conflict, struggled to meet people's basic needs. In stark contrast, in humanitarian appeals, sectors that address gender-based violence and sexual and reproductive health services are only funded at 33% and 43%, respectively, compared with an average funding of 61% for the overall appeal. None of the ceasefire agreements reached between 2018 and 2020 included the prohibition of sexual violence, and the percentage of peace agreements with gender provisions stands at 28.6%. At this critical juncture, we have to review prioritization. Thriving nations are equal nations, and equal nations are more peaceful nations, but people cannot thrive without investment in their basic needs like health and social protection. Conflict-affected countries spend 2 to 3 times more on defense than on healthcare. The opposite is true in most stable countries. When state support is absent or inadequate, women rely even more on their local organizations. Yet, the share of bilateral aid supporting feminist, women-led, and women's rights organizations and movements in fragile or conflict-affected countries is mere 0.4%. Furthermore, there has been a striking increase in the fragility of funding for these organizations. More than 80% of local civil society organizations working on the front lines of crisis reported this year that their organization's existence was at risk due to lack of funding, up from 30% reported last year. There is no better predictor to our ability to advance gender equality or reduce violence against women than the strength of the women's movement. We cannot expect women organizations to perform miracles if they do not have enough funds to keep their lights on and if their leaders are under constant threat. There is an urgent need to accelerate both programmatic and institutional financing. One pathway to shift the spending paradigms is to increase the number of women in elected and appointed posts. I ask the international community to do more to support the participation of women in decision-making on defense and security sector expenditures, to expand the use of gender budgeting tools and programming to influence military spending levels, and to strengthen citizens' oversight of military budgeting through enhanced transparency and accountability. My second request builds on the Secretary General's call for partnerships, protection, and participation, which is also a central part of our common agenda and a renewed social contract. Women's equal and meaningful participation in peace and security is the central goal of Resolution 1325, yet we continue to fall short. Quotas and other special measures are our best mechanism to accelerate positive change to increase representation. The report shows us that women's parliamentary representation in conflict and post-conflict countries doubles where there are legislated quotas. The UN is committed to promoting the use of quotas, not just in politics, but in peace processes and other relevant contexts. Other recommended approaches include inclusive selection measures, independent delegations of women representatives, political commitment by member states for processes they support, as well as investment in better data collection, gender analysis, and monitoring of results across all peace efforts. It is clear that women's participation and their protection are linked. We simply cannot have one without the other. And we cannot expect women to build peace if their lives are constantly under threat. The report provides examples of the violence committed against women and girls in conflict settings and refugee camps, much of it conducted with almost complete impunity. This includes instances of targeted violence against women in public life who are fighting for peace or for their rights. In Colombia, 10 of the 16 members of the Special Forum on Gender, which monitors the implementation of the gender provisions of the peace agreement, reported threats made directly against them, as did women who participated in the Libyan Political Dialogue Forum in 2020. The rapid takeover of Afghanistan by the Taliban was preceded by a wave of killings of women, civil society activists and journalists, and the targeting of academics, vaccinators, and women judges. This is happening in other countries too. In 2020, the UN verified 35 cases of killings of women human rights defenders, journalists, and trade unionists. But this number is a significant undercount and comes from only 7 conflict-affected countries with data. We are falling short of providing protection to these women, even those who risk their lives to collaborate with the United Nations. The ranges from properly assessing the risks and monitoring threats to planning for contingencies, making rapid and flexible funding available for individual cases, ensuring that women are part of delivering and planning humanitarian aid, and taking all necessary measures to enhance digital and physical security. The Women's Peace and Humanitarian Fund, which has already supported more than 400 women's organizations since 2016, is working on opening a special window for such cases. This could help to pay for evacuation and resettlement costs, counseling and mental health care, and necessary equipment from computer software to security cameras. Here again, we need governments to step up. We rely on your governments to open doors for these women and facilitate and expedite the approval of applications for asylum, temporary relocation, or protected status due to gender-based persecution. We rely on you to support the work of women's civil society organizations, to condemn, investigate, and punish attacks against them, and review the national laws that may be constraining their civic space and curtailing their activities and funding. Distinguished delegates, when we act together, we can accomplish transformative change. From Mexico City to Paris this year, the resounding expression of political and financial support to gender equality, galvanized by the Generation Equality Forum, could not have come at a better time. Part of that movement to advance gender equality and all that it can bring was the new Compact on Women, Peace and Security, and Humanitarian Action, whose areas of work will be directly supportive of the Secretary General's goals. I invite you to join the 153 signatories and make concrete commitments to advance our common cause over the next 5 years. I hope that you feel and share my sense of urgency to make progress in the Women, Peace and Security agenda. If we want to see a tangible difference in the lives of women and girls and a paradigm shift in the way we confront peace and security issues, we need governments to step up. And not just the governments in countries that are suffered by conflict, but also their regional neighbors, their trading partners, their military allies, their donors, and most of all, this Security Council. For too long, we have seen vast military spending that is in bitter contrast to the limited investment in other areas. For too long, we have seen the violence targeted against women and their rights, and at the same time, the extreme marginalization and exclusion of those women from the very places where they can drive change. Surely, the time has come to say enough. Surely, there is hope. Today's report recommends solutions. I look forward to working with all of you in support of their implementation, and I thank you.
Sima Sami Bahous became the new executive director of UN Women in September 2021. You just heard her October 21st speech to the UN Security Council about its not yet well fulfilled Resolution 1325 on women, peace, and security. One point on which Dr. Bahous has been quite emphatic is the need for more funds for women's activities. From its inception, UN Women received only minimal administration support from the UN system. For everything else, it has relied on voluntary financial contributions, mostly from governments. In the spring and summer of 2021, UN Women mounted a series of 2 major events, a combination of live and virtual, under the banner Generation Equality. The first, in March in Mexico City, focused on youth empowerment. The second in Paris in June brought UN agencies, institutions, organizations, governments, and private sector operatives to the table and pressed them for both policy and financial commitments toward women's achievement of the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. Participants in the Paris event committed to about $40 billion over a 5-year period. Of the $40 billion, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation promised $2.1 billion. Shortly after Bahous became head of UN Women, UN Media hosted a joint interview of Sima Sami Bahous and Melinda French Gates, each appearing on a separate video screen. Here are excerpts from their remarks.
Let me start by saying that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have played a unique role for the Generation Equality Forum as creative partners, as well as practical and generous financial supporters. So thank you very much, Melinda. I also know that the team at UN Women has deeply appreciated Melinda's personal engagement and commitment vision throughout. Our partnership, for example, with the Gates Foundation, with Melinda in particular, on getting the right data is extremely important. UN Women has always been looking at the best data. I know from my past experience that data on girls is largely non-existent in so many areas. We need to look at more data for women, more data for girls to understand where the issues are. There are inequalities in data. There are also inequalities in analyzing the data.
High praise there, Ms. French-Gates, from the future executive director of UN Women for your role in terms of capacitating the Generation Equality Forum. Speak to the cross-cutting nature of what was done there.
6 action coalitions did work well over 18 months to bring private business, government, civil society, advocates together at one Zoom table. It all had to be done online because of COVID, but to really discuss what does good policy look like? What are good implementation programs? Where do we need more data? Just to give one example, coming out of the Economic Justice and Action Coalition, that group decided they wanted to carry on their work after the Generation Equality Forum, specifically around caregiving, because they know this is such a crisis for women, the caregiving piece, the unpaid labor that women do. And they're seeing good policy and programming's going in some countries. They want to make sure that gets shared across countries and that good implementation happens. It's the only way we're going to ever get to some of those 2030 goals on gender equality.
What is good for gender equality is good for the economy and society. We know that gender equality is possible. We must have hope as the world learns to live with COVID-19 and starts to emerge from the crisis. There is a generational opportunity to use the recovery from this crisis to shape a better, greener, more gender equal and sustainable world with women and girls at the center and with the Sustainable Development Goals as our target.
Ms. French-Gates, what do you see as the greatest barriers to advancing gender equality during the recovery and beyond?
As a foundation, we really look at 3 key areas. We call them cash, care, and data. If you look at the economic recoveries going on around the world, cash means good social protection programs for women, putting money in women's hands. Caregiving means having good policies, so you subsidize childcare or you put policies in place like paid family medical leave. And by data, we mean collecting the data so that we can know exactly where to pinpoint programming as governments, as the private sector, as foundations, so that we can have a full and robust return of our economies. If we invest in social protection, we can lift 100 million women out of poverty. If we invest in the right way in caregiving, we can actually add $3 trillion of GDP across the world. So these are programs that countries should look at, whether you're low, middle, or high income, so that you can get a full and just economic return. We've got to put women at the center, and we will get return to our economies that we want globally.
Countries like Brazil, like Chile, like South Africa, like Togo have made efforts to close the gaping holes in social protection systems by experimenting with cash transfers for informal workers, which include, of course, many, many women, and strengthening access to unemployment insurance for domestic workers. Also, Kenya and Senegal spearheaded public procurement programs that connect women, small-scale producers, to a predictable source of income and offer support to their livelihoods in times of crisis, as well as ensuring fresh and nutritious food for schools and hospitals. In other countries, women are given mobile phones, they are given access to credit, they are given access to more information. And as we all know, when women are given cash or credit or any support, they spend it on their families, on their kids, on their education, and on their health. So this also helps improve societies. Also, countries that had broad-based social protection systems in place were able to rapidly use and adapt existing schemes to extend coverage and increase levels of protection in the face of crisis. For example, in Europe, wage subsidies made up for over half of the earnings lost by the reduction in working hours, thereby mitigating increases in inequality.
Localization, Ms. Bowers, is very, very important when it comes to gender equality because, you know, gender-based violence, for example, is happening within the household, within communities, and it's for those communities to resolve as opposed to perhaps having good policy from a national government, but they can't necessarily go into everyone's home where a woman is facing the fists of a man. Speak to that, the importance of localization.
I will tell you one thing. Nothing on the SDGs would happen unless people at the local level, at the grassroots level, understand the SDGs and can really be active and meaningful participants in the implementation, so that national policies and national programs and national initiatives will trickle down. And involving women at the grassroots level, at the local level, and having them understand how they can be active in their homes, in their schools, in their farms, in their yards, everywhere, it is also very important for us.
I will say, Ms. Bowers, a lot of people are getting their first introduction to how you will approach your new role as executive director. And what we can see from your conversation is a lot of granular detail. It's data driven, and I think that's very important.
Building forward better with data is important. Also, the UN has had a number of campaigns that were fighting misinformation, and these are also important for the public.
Did you want to jump in, Ms. French Gates? Did I see a hand?
Yes, I wanted to give one specific example of how to combat misinformation. When there was the horrible outbreak of COVID-19 that we all saw in India, the Indian government knew they had these women's collectives, that is, groups of about 12 to 20 women that exist all over the country. And those women's collectives have long given health information and vital information to their communities. So they armed hundreds of millions of women with the right information about wearing masks and how to protect your family. And those women went out in their own communities and spread real information. If you give them the right information, as women have told me all over the world, they said, women talk. When we have the right information, we talk. We talk at the well, we talk at the births of the children, we talk when we're grinding millet. I know I talk to my women friends in the US. What are you doing with your family? How are you protecting your kids? Women spread information, and women at the heart of this economic recovery can absolutely change society.
Wings thanks UN Women and UN Media for the audio in this program of Seema Sami Bahous and Melinda French Gates. For information and links, email wings@wings.org or check our website wingsradio.org/wordpress. Thanks also to all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose recent events can be viewed on the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wing Series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.